Recent reports from the L.A. County Police Department say that hate crimes against Muslims, Arab Americans, and people appearing to be Muslims spiked in the last 2 months of last year following the terrorist attacks in San Bernardino.
Advocacy groups have also reported that cases of Islamophobia rose after the terrorist attacks in Paris last November, which ISIS claimed responsibility for. In response to cases of hate crimes, harassment, and rhetoric against Muslims, the Huffington Post launched a digital tracker that records and reports cases of Islamophobia.
Here to tell us more are the people behind the project. Rowaida Abdulaziz is with us. She's the world social media editor at the Huffington Post. Rowaida, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Christopher Matthias. He's national reporter for the Huffington Post. Christopher, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Rowaida, let's start with you. Can you tell us why you decided to start tracking incidents of Islamophobia?
Absolutely. Just to give a little context, our tracker actually dates back to about November, December of last year, when we started a very simplistic list of tracking anti-Muslim rhetoric after the Paris attacks, which occurred in early November. And simply put, the list was actually way too long to keep track of for just a normal article that we were working on. And we started to realize a common theme here, that these incidents were no longer isolated incidents, especially after the Paris attacks, where we've realized the amount of anti-Muslim incidents tripled ever since Paris. And so when 2016 came in, we knew we had to do something about it and launched this fairly comprehensive and digital tracker that you guys see here today.
And Christopher, can you tell us what constitutes an act of Islamophobia, something that reaches the point where you'll include it in this tracking system?
Sure. You know, this tracker will never necessarily be an entirely comprehensive list. I think there are probably, you know, a lot of daily indignities American Muslims face. You know, there are probably certain Facebook posts that your family or friends might post that, you know, we're not necessarily going to include. But basically, we are tracking, you know, moments of Islamophobic rhetoric from politicians, in the media, Islamophobic policy, anti-refugee policy that specifically targets Muslims, and of course, actual hate crimes and acts of aggression targeting Muslims solely based on the fact that they are or appear to be Muslim.
And Rowaida, how are you tracking these? How are you trying to find as many of these kind of incidents as you can find?
We have a number of ways that we are collecting these stories. First and foremost, we, of course, working for the news, we are monitoring news, both national media and local resources, and just seeing the incidents that may not make it up to mainstream media. And so we're being very vigilant and hyper-aware of those resources. But in addition to, we've also set up an email distro on our tracker, which is Islamophobia@HuffingtonPost.com, where we've been collecting tips and stories and just communicating with everyday American Muslims who have been reaching out to us and telling us that they faced a particular incident or a loved one or a friend or a family member, in which we would conduct it like any regular story, where we conduct interviews, talk to that person, verify their stories, and after kind of launching somewhat of an investigation, we would editorially collectively decide if this was specifically targeted as an anti-Muslim crime, and we would further include in our tracker.
Okay. Also, I just want to add, mm-hmm. we have worked a lot with different advocacy groups, including, like among others, the Council on American Islamic Relations, who does a really good job at tracking these things. And the idea behind the email address, Islamophobia@HuffingtonPost.com, is to, you know, kind of have there be a central place and create a social network with these advocacy groups and across social media platforms to make sure that, you know, these reports aren't falling through the cracks and that we can kind of see them as part of a bigger picture.
In a bit, we'll get into some of the particular instances that you've recorded there. But Christopher, in addition to people using this email to report incidents of anti-Muslim harassment, Islamophobia in general, there's been an angry response, some fairly hateful email coming in. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Kind of ironic. We didn't necessarily think about it when we started the email address, but of the hundreds of emails we've received, probably say a good 70% are Islamophobic. And, you know, basically, you know, used some pretty vile and vulgar language towards me and Rueda and our colleagues here at the Huffington Post, and really kind of effectively prove our point. But also what we've kind of realized with all this hate mail is that in a way this hate mail is kind of one of our best resources, because what we've kind of seen is that a lot of these emails and a lot of the misinformation surrounding Islam and American Muslims follows almost kind of a particular script that these people are getting from certain websites and certain hate groups. So in that way, it's been pretty instructive. And I think we'll, as this project develops over the course of the year, we'll use that hate mail as kind of a resource for myth busting and looking at a lot of the misperceptions and misinformation about American Muslims and Islam in general.
Rueda, can you talk about that a little more? What kind of myths and misconceptions do you see that might be underlying some of the incidents you're tracking and some of the angry emails you're getting?
Well, I think first and foremost, one of the main things that we've noticed in the hate mails is a lot of these things are very similar, and you can see that the sources that these people are using are from the same sites and the same people who are instituting this fear-mongering type of paranoia. And so there's a lot of confusion as to what Islam is, what are the actual pillars that Muslims believe in. And to be quite frank, we're not all very angry people who are trying to take over the world, which may come to as a surprise for a few. And so, unfortunately, people are very confused as to what the religion is, just basically what do Muslims believe in and why, and how do they differ from the mainstream fear and unfortunately extremist groups that tend to hijack the name of Islam and Muslims and claim it for it to be their own. So what makes your Muslim neighbor different from the acts of ISIS abroad? And a lot, actually, and many people don't realize this. And so therefore, we're seeing a lot of intertwining of politics and paranoia and blanket all of a generalization under the name of Islam and in the name of American Muslims who have been here for decades, actually, and have contributed a lot to American society. But some people just cannot seem to make that difference.
And I'll add to that, like one thing, a couple of themes we get in our emails is this idea of creeping Sharia law coming into our courts and our schools and what have you, you know, which has been thoroughly debunked. And then there's this idea of civilizational jihad, which is this paranoid conspiracy theory that, you know, that there's some kind of central conspiracy in Islam to make America into some kind of caliphate. It's the kind of thing that's propagated by certain groups, including a guy like Frank Gaffney, who today was, it emerged, was named a foreign policy advisor to Ted Cruz.
Talking to Christopher Mathias and Rueda Abdulaziz. They're both with the Huffington Post, and they're part of a digital online tracking project to trying to collect incidents of Islamophobia, violence, harassment, intimidation, targeting Muslims in the United States. Rueda, you mentioned the sort of daily indignities of life. What are some of the things that you've seen, you've reported on, that have happened to just everyday Muslims as they go about their day?
Well, the disparities are quite extreme. We've documented things from just most recently a couple of young girls just trying to take a train to one of their college classes in New Jersey and being verbally harassed and yelled at and even spit on by a man, and them not being able to find help and having people watch them. Unfortunately, no one's standing up for them, conductors on the train, et cetera, to as far as people who are walking down the street and simply speaking Arabic and being stabbed because of it, and unfortunately having a member of the law enforcement being one of those perpetrators. And so these daily indignities can really do vary from just online harassment and people saying terrible things and can fatally lead to a stabbing and even some death. We've documented also a report of an elderly man who hired someone to do some yard work from him and end up being beaten by a shovel. And so the incidents are very scary and they're very real, and which is one of the main messages as to why we are doing this. Many times people hear and we hear that Islamophobia isn't real and there is no such thing as discrimination against Muslims. And by having this, it shows that it very is real and has very difficult consequences that we have to face as a country.
And Christopher, you also mentioned, you've referred to this, you're trying to track political rhetoric and I think legislative action too.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, the thing about this list is that it's, you know, really happening against the backdrop of some pretty vile anti-Muslim rhetoric. You know, the most famous recently, of course, being Donald Trump, you know, saying that he would ban all Muslims coming to the United States. Just last week, he said that he thinks Islam hates us, whatever that means. And there's been, and it's not isolated to Trump. If you look at politicians across the country, in state, local, and federal, you'll see these kind of themes emerging there as well. In New Hampshire, there are bills across the United States that are basically spreading misinformation. There's a lot of bills regarding the Islamic indoctrination in schools. There are many bills. There's one in Florida that authorizes the governor to use military, and this is direct quotes from the bill, that authorizes the governor to use, quote, military force against, quote, invaders from, quote, the Eastern Hemisphere. It's very specific, and it basically buys into a lot of paranoia about Muslims and Muslim refugees. And yeah, we're definitely keeping track of that.
And very briefly, Rueda, do you think that the climate is getting more difficult, worse for Muslims in America?
It is getting difficult, and to be honest, some say that it's been the most difficult in a very long time. However, there is hope, and we like to believe that the majority of Americans rise above this type of hate and any type of hate against anyone. And so this is out there, and we're out there, and we just ask people to speak up, and if they see an injustice, to say something, and if they hear of a story, to talk to us, because we know collectively it's only going to get better if we realize that this is a very real problem. And so as long as we continue to stay in denial, it's only going to get worse.
Rueda, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Chris, thanks to you as well. We've been talking to Rueda Abdulaziz and Christopher Mathias, telling us about the Huffington Post's new efforts to track anti-Muslim violence and harassment.
Coming up, our guest says it's time to consider renegade rules for parenting, like telling kids it's okay to go up the slide. I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Farah. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.